over here, kid, will you, son? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You gotta do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet. My country, 'tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry. Stay hungry. Stay hungry.
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the one country's most delicious hour. Thanks for tuning in tonight. I'm Michelle Jordan. I'll be with you until just a little bit before 8 o'clock. And we have two themes tonight here on Mouthful. Returning, probably in record time, the first guest, I think, to reappear on Mouthful so quickly. We have Rob Dickerson of Trout Unlimited and Kent McIntosh, McIntosh Fishing Guide. Both were here very recently to talk about the Wild Steelhead Trout Festival in Healdsburg that was a huge success by all accounts. So we will be spending most of the hour talking about fish and fisheries in the North Bay and beyond. But first, we have Nancy Wang here. We're still in the middle or nearing, I guess we're right about in the middle of the Chinese New Year, Lunar New Year celebration. It is the Year of the Rat. And there is a party coming up on Saturday, February 24th. Nancy, thanks for taking time to be here.
Thank you. It's the 23rd.
What? 23rd?
Yes, Saturday, the February 23rd, Saturday night. And door open 5 o'clock at the Santa Rosa Memorial Building, Veterans Building.
And I was there last year. It's really a fun, fun party.
Yes, it is. And we've been doing this for 18 years. Every year we try to improve our event to try to do more our culturally, sharing our culture for the community resident here. So we put a lot of effort and a lot of energy to put at this event.
One of the things I really liked about it, and last year was the first year that I went, there are so many little kids.
Yes.
And you do, there are special things for the kids to do, and they just seem to all get to know each other, and they run around together, and nobody gets uptight that they're running around, and they just seem to have a ball.
Yes, we always have, this is a family event, and because we have a lot of entertainment, and also we have a lot of table there, the children can participate, and this year we have an origami that's the folding paper, professional people there to help to teach the children how to fold the colorful paper to all the different kind of animal shape or really unique the art things the children can participate. Then we do have a cutting, pasting, all these kind of things. Keep kids, you know, busy, and they love that. Then also we do have our language students being wish everybody Happy New Year, short program singing and say some Chinese to everybody. Then we're giving out the red envelope to all the children coming to our event.
Mm-hmm. Now, last year there was something, I think it was with the dragon, and all of the kids started gathering around. And I'm looking at them thinking, wow, they have such really long attention spans. It turns out they were all waiting for the candy that was going to be thrown.
That's right.
So they sort of know that there's this tradition that's going to happen.
Yes, this, they call the lucky candies. Oh. And the dragon is 250 feet long, and we do have a few spots. You just have been trained. This is the only time we can have the guest to participate to holding our dragon. Because normally in the Rose Parade, we had to train our own people. Mm-hmm. But for this only New Year event, we do invite the guests to join us to strolling that 250 feet long dragon. And I think only the people we have a training is the head, the gait, and the tail. Then rest.
Oh, the rest are guests.
Yeah, rest, we can invite the guests to participate, having fun. Then the Lion King is another different event. Mm-hmm. That's more involved with the martial art. That had to be really training. Mm-hmm. And so had to be our youth group and our Lion King to perform with that.
The lion performances are, they're one of those things like bagpipes for me, actually. Mm-hmm. They start in and they make me get all choked up. It's so, there's something so beautiful and magical about it. If you've never seen it, if you've never seen the dragon, the lion dancers or anything, this is a great opportunity. You don't have to go all the way to San Francisco. It was absolutely beautiful.
You're right. You know, we're just in our backyard. You know, you don't have to travel to that far.
Yeah. And it's kind of crazy in San Francisco on that night. I mean, it's a great parade, but you have to get tickets well in advance just to have a seat.
You're right, because this is every year we do sold out. Mm-hmm. And we wish we can have more people can join us, but just we couldn't get any place bigger than that.
Bigger than the Veterans Building.
Yes, the Veterans Building. And also our budget has pretty tight, so this mm-hmm. is the only way we can do 600 tickets, and every year we do sold out. So I hope everybody can get a ticket earlier.
And this on Sunday, what is it, the 17th, the 18th today? You may be listening to it at a different time, though. Tickets currently are available.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And at Asia Mart on Guerneville Road, G&G Supermarket, the one on West College in Santa Rosa, and the very sweet Asia Gourmet on Montgomery Drive in Santa Rosa, in honor of the Year of the Rat, we played an interview with JJ from Asia Mart. We played that last Sunday. Great. I mean, Asia Gourmet. And I do have some sad news. Asia Gourmet is going to be closing at the end of February. So,
yeah, we're going
really
to miss her.
It's the best store.
Yes, that's the best store and so unique. Yeah. It's a really shame.
Yeah. But they will be staying open through the end of February.
Yes.
So what, we have the dragons, we have the lions, we have some other performances, we have origami tables for kids. What other sort of entertainment is there at the event?
This year we have a special guest, actually it's from San Francisco. We call the kind of like a magic changing face mask. Within 5 minutes he can change 10, 15 different faces. This has been 300 years history in China. And not that many people can do this trick anymore. So really valuable culture. It's then after the changing mask, he will do some kind of Chinese magic also with the chi. And then also we have another instrument and concert we call guzhen. It's a six golden flower from San Francisco. They're going to do about 10 to 15 minutes Chinese music concert for us, mm-hmm. too.
And there's also some dancing.
Yeah,
remember
we have
last year there's some
yeah, we
girls.
Have a culture dance. We have a little girls dance. Also, we have adult dance, too, but it's all Chinese culture dance. Then we have adult chorus. They're going to sing beautiful because they practice every week.
Mm-hmm. Great. So this is taking place on Saturday, February 23rd, Veterans Memorial Building in Santa Rosa. It's $25 for adults, and children 3 to 10 years old are $10.
Yes, that's correct. This is included dinner. Don't forget, it's a
that's
buffet
right.
dinner.
Buffet
yes.
dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us just a little bit about what we should know about Year of the Rat. This is, if I understand it correctly, this is starting the Chinese zodiac.
Yes, this is the starting
the first one. So
first one, the year the rat. Actually, the Chinese way to say the you were born the year the rat is easy to get along with, charming, and hardworking. Always finish with the set out to do.
So it sounds like a good time to start a new project.
That's right, especially the year the rat.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Nancy, for taking time. I know you have tons of work to do. I should also tell you there's raffles with the raffle prizes, and there's silent auction items as well as all of this other fun stuff, the Year of the Rat, Chinese New Year celebration, and I will be writing about it in some way or another in my column on Thursday as well.
Thank you. And also, can I bring one thing up?
Yes.
This is the first year we got ABC license.
That's right.
So we can allow it to serve selling the wine and beer. Actually, it's pretty good. The local winery, Windsor Wineries, donate the wine, put our special Red Wing Parish Chinese Association's logo in the bottle wine.
Mm-hmm.
Then also the the Manic St. George Winery donated one also. And the beer, it's locally the brewing Lagunitas.
Oh, yes, Lagunitas.
The brewing in Petaluma.
They're good friends to the community.
They're really good. Then also we have Rodney Strong Winery donated one also to us. So it's really generous out there helping our event successful. So we're really happy and we're really appreciate with all the community support us, then we can continue serve for the community.
Yeah. It's always nice to see community, everyone in the community come together to celebrate various holidays. And you know, beer and wine really help make a celebration.
You're right.
So, thank you so much for taking time
You're
to
welcome.
Be here.
Thank you for having me here.
You
thank
bet.
You very much. And I hope see everybody on the 20th. I can't say everybody because we only have 600 tickets.
But
so
if,
please
get your tickets
join,
in.
Yes.
And I will see you there.
Thank you.
It's Mouthful. It is KRCB. And now, on to fish. Kent McIntosh, not only McIntosh Fishing Guide, but also president of the Redwood Empire chapter of Trout Unlimited. And Rob Dickerson, you're the project manager for the North Coast Coho Project with Trout Unlimited.
Correct.
And Trout Unlimited, if let me make sure I have this right, it's a separate, independent, nonprofit organization?
Yes. We're a national nonprofit with our national office in Arlington, Virginia.
Oh.
And then we have
okay.
field offices around the country where the Coldwater fisheries are, the Appalachians, the Driftless area in Wisconsin, Montana, the Rockies, and the West Coast.
Mm-hmm. So what is the North Coast Coho Project?
The North Coast Coho Project is actually, this is the 10th anniversary, and it was an innovative partnership between a conservation organization that is Trout Unlimited and the Mendocino Redwood Company. And just historically, Mendocino Redwood Company bought or purchased Louisiana Pacific's holdings on the North Coast, mostly primarily in Sonoma and Mendocino counties. And Mendocino Redwood Company also happens to be owned by the Fisher family, which owns, people may be familiar with the Gap stores. The Fishers own the Gap, and they're known for their care about the environment, and so they have committed MRC, Mendocino Redwood Company, to sustain forest practices, all those, and they're certified and all that sort of thing. So Trout Unlimited and the Mendocino Redwood Company started in South Fort Garcia River, which is in Mendocino County, and the primary focus of that the North Coast Coho Project has been basically keeping dirt out of streams that have resulted from literally thousands of miles of forest roads that, or timber haul roads, rural roads that now are owned by rural subdivisions that can, you know, discharge thousands of cubic yards in a single event to a stream. So in a big rainstorm, you can have a slide, the dirt goes in the creek, and typically that occurs at the same time that the salmonids that we talked about last week or last time, the trout and the salmon are spawning.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be detrimental to them. It can fill up the pools and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, as you hear a lot about gravel mining in the Russian River, is that something that also interferes?
It does. Anytime there's human activity in a watershed, you know, specifically gravel mining has had an impact because actually historically when the Golden Gate Bridge was built, a lot of the gravel that was used for the concrete came from the Russian River. And you see pictures of equipment in the middle of the stream in these 40-foot pits that are well below the actual water flow. So that has had, among other things, has had an impact on the Russian River watershed and other watersheds around, you know, around the world, really.
Mm-hmm. So what's the good news?
The good news is that we are working... the way I see this too is that it's been a real generational shift. With, you know, as we have grown up, you know, us '60s folks, I was kind of at the end of that. But those of us in the same general age range are now running companies like Mendocino Redwood Company, mm-hmm. and I've seen a real shift in. Not only does it make business sense, but it's the right thing to do,
mm-hmm.
and so it's good that they're. Doing what I would consider, and I think what they consider, the right thing. And what we've seen, unfortunately, we haven't seen a response in the fisheries, but what we have seen is literally, at least the work that we've done, thousands of miles of roads being upgraded to modern standards so that they literally don't bleed, it's another term for it, sediment into mm-hmm. the streams, and opened up 10 or 12 miles of previously inaccessible fish habitat because of culverts that were undersized, taking culverts out and putting in bridges. And then the other component that we do a fair amount of is putting, it's called large woody debris, putting rocks and logs back into the stream to recreate what the habitat looked like, you know, thousands of years ago when 300-foot redwood trees would fall in the creek and sit there for hundreds mm-hmm. of years.
So basically, if I'm understanding this right, in layman's terms, what you're doing is you're getting the environment that the fish like back closer to how it was when the fish were thriving, so that then the fisheries, which I think by fisheries that's the population of fish, the fisheries have the best possible opportunity to become more abundant. Is
correct.
That the right way to put it?
On the land side, the other big component to this is the ocean conditions and what occur in the ocean. And all up and down the West Coast this year, the salmon numbers are dramatically down. Almost what I saw from a recently issued federal report was like 70%.
Does anyone know why?
They now are saying it's because of ocean conditions. When you look at all the monitoring that's going on in the ocean, that's the conclusion that they've come to. It's not as productive for the fish. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what their exact reasoning is for that.
I don't think they don't know, I don't think. I think that they have an idea, the upwelling. They're concerned about global warming. The ocean isn't cold enough to mm-hmm. produce the plankton and thus the whole food chain is disrupted, and so the salmonids have nothing to feed on.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if the lower, the smaller fish, the sardines, the mm-hmm. anchovies, they feed on the shrimp, and it works up the mm-hmm. up the chain. And if the shrimp are not getting what they need, then the anchovies, they're going to be fewer of them, and then the pot gets smaller and smaller, mm-hmm. and consequently, it begins to collapse. And I think that the other part of the equation and that we should pay attention to is overfishing. I mean, we do overfish, and so that's part of the equation. It's not the total part, but significant. Everything has an effect, you know. So,
now, are there any fish populations, any species of fish these days in this area that are doing well?
Oh, I think that it depends. I don't think that, really,
question?
Realistically, no. No, we don't have the populations that we had that we had 50 years ago, and we're struggling even with programs designed for recovery. And if we are specific about the Russian River, the Coho is a great example. We're struggling to bring them back, and in fact, this year I think they found no Coho returning. So it's a significant problem. Mm-hmm. And the things that we were talking about earlier, we're talking about gravel mining. It has its effect on the river, and meaning the habitat that these fish need to spawn in and to rear the young. And to go along with that, it's interesting that just recently, as you know, I'm a guide, and I haven't fished the Russian River now for well over a week. And what's going on, and this is directly related to what we're talking about, the dams are releasing water, okay, and which keeps the turbidity up in the river. So we've talked about this in the past when the fish come in into the river, and Chinook in particular, they will spawn mainstream. So they fish, they dig the red, they cover the red, and they, of course, they leave. But the eggs in the red, the roe in the red, is maturing.
Wait, remind us what the red is.
Oh, the red is actually the nest the female digs to deposit her eggs in. And
she deposits them, and then the male comes along,
and he fertilizes them, right? Mm-hmm.
After, independently.
Actually, they do it simultaneously.
Simultaneously.
It's this great photograph of two fish with their mouths wide open. The signal is, hey,
let's do this.
Simultaneous. they both, one lets the eggs go, the other lets the milk go, and it's a great, great dance. But what's going on now in the Russian River is that the releases from Coyote Dam are causing a lot of turbidity in the river. So we've already had a major rain event. I think we've actually had two this year, and I'm not quite sure the amount of rain we've had. In the past, what's gone on, the Army Corps of Engineer, who's in charge of these releases water right after we've had these high events, saying that, well, what they have to do is they have to make sure that the reservoirs are not so full that there would be a problem of flooding.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's fine and well, but this year we've had a deficit, right? We've had a deficit in the reservoirs. In fact, it was critical, if you remember what was in the paper with Coyote Dam. The reservoir was way, way down. So what had to happen is that we went to low flow this year in the Russian River. And that was based on the fact that there wasn't enough water to support the salmonids, salmon in particular, in the river. In other words, they want to keep the flow high enough so that in the fall the salmon can come in. Well, what they did is they released water, I believe, in February or March last year, and there was no reason to release water. Last year was a drought, right? So what they did is they created their own scarce resource. They dumped all this water. And knowing that, hey, if there's no more rain, that what are you going to do?
Yeah.
You know, in other words, you're going to have to cut back. But what's going on now is that they're testing the pumps at both reservoirs, okay, at Sonoma and Coyote, and it's causing a great deal of turbidity. So the river is really, really off color. It's got high sediment mm-hmm. drifting through it. And what I'll ask the question. I mean, what value is that to the salmon that just spawned 2 or 3 months ago, and their offspring, right, who have just come out of the gravel, you know? So it would be like my concern would be it's for that small Alvin or that fry is like living in a smoke-filled room,
Alvin.
Right? Alvin is the...
Is a little fish.
Is really a little fish, right? A very small fish.
It's not a chipmunk.
Yeah.
No. They call them Alvins.
Alvin. A-L-E-V-I-N. But yeah. Not, hey, Alvin.
Yeah, they're very small. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are the yolk sac. It's very interesting how they develop. Uh-huh. Because they come out of you see the egg, and then you see the eyeball in the egg as it matures, and then the head begins to form and a tail begins to form, but the actually the egg is in the belly area, and so the Alvin loses the belly. But point being, we're talking about the conditions in the river, and the conditions right now are terrible. Like I said, I haven't fished for well over a week. I had to go over, I had to take people out on the Walala last Monday, and I've canceled 4 trips this week. And given the fact that the river is so discolored and uh-huh. from the releases from the dam, and it's something that people should be really concerned about. Because if we're really trying to save salmonids in the Russian River, then these kind of things shouldn't happen. In other words, the Army Corps of Engineers should be, in other words, everybody should be on the same page. The Army Corps, NOAA Fisheries, Department of Fish and Game, they should all coordinate these things and say, hey, gee whiz, let's get together and decide what this flow regime should be, and let's have it mimic what is a natural flow regime, not keep mm-hmm. switching right. things, because the fish can't do it. The interesting thing about the fish in this river, they're conditioned to come in and out given the natural flow regime. The river gets very, very low. They can handle that. They've genetically designed mm-hmm. themselves to be able to maintain themselves in a population. Mm-hmm. But if we keep tweaking it, creating our own idea of what flow should be, mm-hmm. then I think that we're really jeopardizing the salmonids.
Mm-hmm. When there have been the sort of releases that we've had lately, and say they stop, I assume they all take place and then they quit for a while, what's the recovery time of the river? When does the sediment start to settle, to go to the bottom, or whatever
great,
it does?
It's a great question. Most people don't pay attention to that. But if you fish, you do. You have to. It takes probably, I would say, depending upon the flow, it takes up to a week and a half to 2 weeks for the river to drop out to the point where it's fishable, mm-hmm. where you get down to maybe a foot of visibility, mm-hmm. okay? Which...
just a foot, huh? That's
a foot of visibility, right. And that's fishable, okay? In my world, it's fishable. Mm-hmm. Now, if I were a fish, I probably wouldn't be very comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. I would like it to be very clear... absolutely no turbidity or, mm-hmm. you know, but up to a week to 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And now we've been going for about, we've almost gone a month.
Mm-hmm. How do fish, what is a fish's primary form of navigation? Do they rely on sight a lot?
Well, basically their sense of smell.
Okay.
Their sense of smell. Of course, their vision. And we could talk about their vision. I mean, the classic is they have this cone of vision. Okay, they have difficulty. They can't see down. So that's why they hug the bottom of the river.
Okay.
There's nowhere to look. You don't have to go any further. You know, you're
so they don't want somebody coming up from
below,
from down below.
Right, and you know about the killer seals. So, right.
Yes.
So those, it's hard to get one of. It's hard to get one of those 800, you know, pound guys 6 inches below you. But basically, they navigate through smell. They have an incredible sense of smell. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so that's the whole thing. It's they find their natal stream, their tributary where they were born or raised by their sense of smell.
Smell. That's really interesting.
Right.
Now, on a day after they. After it's all settled out and it's back to good fishing conditions,
yeah.
What is a day fishing on the Russian River like with you?
With me?
Yes.
Well, it begins very early in the morning, and I like to say that it begins, it would begin at 5 o'clock, but that's not true, and that's a.m., but it's not. Normally it begins at about 4 a.m. for me because I have to get everything ready. I have to get my boat, my trailer hooked up. So I can give you an example. If I'm fishing, for example, Memorial Beach in Healdsburg to Steelhead Beach, okay, down on the lower part of the river, down toward Guerneville, I'm up at 4, and I'm meeting my client at 6 o'clock at Steelhead Beach. I'm leaving a vehicle there. And we're traveling back, a pickup vehicle, a shuttle vehicle. We're traveling back then at probably about 6:15 back to Healdsburg. I put the boat in the river. And by that time, it's pretty much, given daylight now, about 6:35, it's getting light.
Mm-hmm.
And then basically we drift all day. Pretty much all day. I'm on the water until about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So it's a long, long day.
And what are you doing while you're on the water? Are you hanging lines over the side
yeah.
of the boat?
Yeah. And I'll fish three ways, okay? And I'll say nothing about the first way. Now, people, because I don't encourage it on this river. Okay, and any other river
so,
I would...
But now you have to kind of just hint at it. You
yeah,
can't leave us
yeah,
wondering.
Yeah, like fly fishing.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So I don't particularly encourage fly fishing on the Russian. It's difficult. There's a lot of traffic. There are areas on the Russian which are great for fly fishing, but if I'm drifting, I don't particularly... it's a lot of hard work, so I don't do... I do it, but I don't recommend it. I like trips where we're doing bait or we're pulling plugs, okay? And when I fish bait, normally I fish roe, which are salmon eggs, okay, or steelhead egg on a small hook.
So one of those little eggs?
No. Oh. Actually, it's a cluster. Thank
it's a
you.
Cluster, okay.
Okay, it's cluster egg, okay? It's a term that I haven't used in a long time. A cluster egg with yarn, okay, and a little puffball on the hook, okay? Or I will fish with shrimp, okay, the small, little salad shrimp instead of the roe.
Okay.
All right? And then the other way, most everybody fishes either bait or they'll pull plugs. Some spots on the river are great for pulling plugs, and so everybody takes
a
plug. Is if you know what a bass plug is, do you have any idea what a bass plug is?
None.
Is it
okay.
like a lure?
It is a lure.
Oh, it's a thing.
It is a thing. That's
it's
a, right.
It's an object.
It's
okay.
a very
it's a
very
thing.
Colorful thing. Okay.
It's
some
an object.
Some are chartreuse green and
you should
yellow.
Flip through a Cabela's magazine or catalog sometime if you've never done that.
What's it called?
Cabela's. It's like the I don't know about the outdoor magazine, but or outdoor apparel place, but it certainly is one. Yeah. It'd be a good education for you to see what people are up to in the fishing and hunting and outdoor world.
Okay.
It's pretty fascinating. And they have all sorts of plugs in there.
Plugs. Okay, so plugs are something you would use in place of...
Yeah, it's a lure. It's another attractor. Essentially, it's an attractor.
Okay.
Okay, and what goes on with And we only fish, I only fish steelhead. So the other thing to understand is that the steelhead is not really eating. They're not feeding when they come in the river.
Right.
Okay. So we were talking about the sensitivity to smell. So the smell actually from the roe is an attractor. In other words, the water, they have this ability to sense what's in the water, smell what's in the water, mm-hmm. and the roe is very fragrant, okay, and familiar to them genetically somewhere in mm-hmm. the package, right, their package. So we use that not to entice them so much to eat, but to locate where the hook is. They have, they're very... they're great predators, and they're very territorial. So what they want to do is they want to remove whatever is in mm-hmm. front of them out of their way. And with a plug, that is the ultimate weapon if you really want to irritate a steelhead.
Oh, okay.
Because they dance around in the water. They hold down yeah. in the water. They go right down. They stay off the bottom about a foot, and they just dance around, and the fish sees it, and they strike at it. Now, sometimes I anchor and let the fish come to the plug, and other times I'll walk the plug down the river mm-hmm. to them, searching for them, not having any idea where they are.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so what I do is, and I do all this by rowing, I don't have a motor, so what I do is I hold the boat, I'm going half speed, whatever the current is, I'm going at least half of that, and I'm pulling back, and then I have two people in the bow of the boat, and the rods are in the bow, and they wait for the fish to hit. And essentially, that's the two methods that mm-hmm. traditionally used on the river. Okay.
Now, if you
bait and plugs.
So you get out there about 6:45, 7 o'clock in the morning. Stay out there until 4. Mm. During that time, how many fish are you going to bring in?
Well, sometimes you bring in none. Right.
Okay.
And if you're a guide, it bothers you, right? Because really, people are paying to go, and you do the best you possibly can. Mm-hmm. But if the fish are not there, if they are there, and they're not taking, then it's very, very frustrating, and it does happen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it just depends. You know, you could have a 10 fish day.
Okay, you could.
Yeah, but you're legally you can only keep 2 per person.
Oh, 2. Okay,
right.
Is that
and they
2
have to
per
be
person
hatchery.
Per day.
That's correct.
Okay.
Right.
And do they have a minimum size?
You know, that's very interesting. On this river, I was just talking with a game warden about 3 weeks ago. There really isn't any minimum size in a Russian. The other interesting thing is there is a limit on steelhead adult, but there is no limit on trout. Okay, the very trout that we were
the trout that becomes
trout,
a steelhead.
That's right.
If it goes into salt water,
there is no limit on them. And so what we're talking about, the possibility of putting through some legislation or looking at putting a limit on size and uh-huh. number, because what it means is people can go out all year round. The river is open. The Russian River is open year round because there's a bass fisheries. Okay, but these smolt. Okay, the small trout are very, very aggressive, and I'll tell you what, they any sort of bait, they're right on top of it, and so they're very tenacious, and they're easy to catch. They're quite easy mm-hmm. to catch. The other thing is they're raised in the hatchery, right? So the fish don't go out and seek in the hatchery. They don't go seek their food under rocks or, you know, bugs falling into the river. People throw the food with the machine on top of it, and they all run to it.
So they're just waiting for somebody to feed them.
Essentially, that's it. They kind of wait. But then they begin to learn after a while you can't run to the top of the river to every time something hits it.
You're listening to Mouthful on KRCV.
Bet you're going fishing all of the time. Baby going fishing too. Bet your life, your sweet wife will catch more fish than you. Me many fish bites if you got good bait. Here's a little tip that I would like to relate. Many fish bites if you got good bait. I'm a going fishing, yes, I'm going fishing, and my baby going fishing too. I went on down to my favorite fishing hole, baby grabbed me a pole and a line. Threw my pole on and caught a 9-pound catfish. Now you know I brought him home for supper time. Proving any fish bites if you got good bait. Here's a little tip that I would like to relate. Many fish bites if you got good bait.
We're fishing here on Mouthful. Okay, both of you.
Yes.
I went into Oliver's Market, oh, it's probably been about a month ago, and I saw golden trout. And I thought, wow, I didn't know those existed. And I asked the guy about them, and he was a little, well, I don't really recommend them. And he said, you know, they're dyed. They're, you know, they've been fed food that makes them gold. And I thought, that's not good. But then I was looking at the big kit of information you gave me from Trout Unlimited, and there was something about golden trout. So what's the deal?
Golden trout are actually the official state fish of California.
Yeah, I've read.
And they're only found, they're remnants of rainbow trout, steelhead, once again. They're remnant populations that are in the Kern River watershed in the Southern Sierra. South or be east of Bakersfield, and so that's where the only place that they're found after the glaciation, they just kind of got isolated. And over the years, their populations have declined because of interbreeding with regular trout and other introduced species. They're the classic ones where people would put them in coffee cans and haul them from one lake to the other, so they're all over the place, but they're only native to the Southern Sierra. And I suspect that the golden trout that you buy in the store are farm-raised somewhere.
Farm-raised and they're fed.
Right, because they're actually, I don't know if they're federally threatened or endangered, but they're on the they're listed under the Endangered Species Act.
So both things are true. The guy was right that they're farm-raised and fed dye.
Right.
And they really do exist.
And I actually just read recently that that's, like with Atlantic salmon, that's they feed them things to give them a color.
Right, yeah, Atlantic, yeah, farm-raised salmon. Yeah, salmon, I knew that about, but I hadn't known that about golden trout. I mean, I didn't know anything about golden trout.
It's a state fish. And our Southern California membership have been really involved with restoration work in the golden trout wilderness for well over a decade now, probably, you know, a couple decades. It's been a long time.
Now, since we mentioned farmed fish, it seems, in trying to do good research on this subject, it seems that there are good ways, good aquaculture and bad aquaculture. There's some that it seems like it's okay, it's not environmentally harmful, and the fish are being fed things that it's like okay. But then it also seems that there's some that's appalling, like farmed salmon, figured that out. What about farmed trout?
Well, for one thing, I really don't know the answer to that question.
Hey, it's okay. Want me to go?
Yeah, go for
farm
it.
Farm trout?
Well, right. I was going to.
Okay.
Ahead.
So at the.
You're holding up the picture of the trout pond at the festival in Healdsburg a couple weeks ago.
Right. Yeah. And the fish that we stocked that pond with were farm trout. Okay. So they're farmed. It's aquaculture. It's a form of aquaculture. You know, so, I mean, just simply stated, aquaculture is not bad, right? Are we talking about aquaculture or are we talking about hatcheries? You see, it's a whole different, world.
It's not black and white.
Yeah, and there is a form. Actually, there is a form of aquaculture, which is salmon are raised in large farms in British Columbia, and as well, I think throughout the world, I think they raise them in Norway. Okay, which is really and Trout Unlimited has a stance that's taken a position about farm-raised salmon. and we're really opposed to it. Mm-hmm. There are all sorts of problems with them. They're a health hazard to actually native runs.
Could they be part of the in this larger picture of the coho not coming back, for example? Is any of that influenced by salmon farms?
The one thing that is, I think, pretty clear is that when you start messing with the genetics of the wild fish, mm-hmm. it makes them much more susceptible to other types of diseases. Mm-hmm. So I think it's pretty clear that one of the reasons wild fish, why we support that, is because they've evolved, as you know, we talked about the Ring of Fire last time, they've evolved over millions of years. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden they start interbreeding with hatchery fish, then that genetic advantage quickly goes away, and it can lead to all sorts of problems.
All sorts of vulnerabilities that they had gotten rid of in the wild.
And that's one of the, you know, how quickly they can adapt to things is not really, I don't know if it's really well known. It takes some time. But given the climate change, you know, the potential for wild fish to survive that, probably have a better opportunity than farm-raised or hatchery fish. I'm just guessing, but I would think that since they've been around longer, that they would have an advantage.
Well, it's you know, it's funny. I was just reading. I was going to bring the article. It was a great article. It's kind of interesting, and it was about a question of genetics and Alzheimer's. And it was a question to a doctor, and it was in a health magazine. I was just looking at it this afternoon, and the doctor said, well, what's important is to be aware of your diet and what you eat. And the first thing he said to eat was wild salmon. It says it's high in omega-3, right? Now, farm salmon, you know that when they go to market, when they're marketed, right? When they market them, they add dye to the fish to make it look like a wild salmon, which is naturally pink because they're feeding on shrimp and all of these things, right?
Farm salmon would be gray without the dye.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so the question, I mean, is it the question of actually, it's a big question. Yeah. This whole thing
about. Well, what about, let's make
it's money. It's huge money. Agra, uh-huh. You know, it's.
So what about farmed trout? For somebody, I mean, where do you stand on that? And I don't know. I mean, I'm looking here. We got the Seafood Watch little guide, and it says farmed trout, U.S. farmed trout. No, just rainbow trout. It said it's okay. It said it's one of the best choices. Is that how?
Yeah.
You follow that?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So how does farm trout, if you don't know, just tell me, how does farm trout taste in comparison to...
wild?
Yeah, if trout you've pulled out yourself.
I just had trout from the trout pond, and I was trying to remember. I don't do a lot of trout fishing anymore, but as a child I used to. That was my beginning, trout fishing. But it seems to me that it has, I mean, it's whatever it's eating, it has this kind of, there's a blandness to it, okay? Mm-hmm. And it's not that natural wild habitat where they're eating the bugs, the snails, the frogs, the tadpoles, right? So, or the leeches, or, you know? Mm-hmm. I really can't, it's not a fair comparison because I can't go back, you know, 50 years mm-hmm. or more. And
yeah. Now, do both of you cook? Do you cook fish?
Yes.
What do you like to do?
Actually, what I typically do is, I like, I have a smoker, so I'll smoke it.
Mm-hmm.
Just, that's what I'll typically do, or, that's what I or barbecue. I don't do anything fancy. I don't put a lot of stuff on it. Mm-hmm. I might put a little garlic, maybe a little salt and pepper, but I really just like the natural flavor of it.
Yeah,
with most food
I
cook, I don't add a lot of things. I don't put salt on things. I like the natural flavor of things.
Well, before I met my cardiologist, I used to like to take fish and put it in tinfoil and then put a half a cube of butter, right?
Yeah.
And then, close it up and then kind of bake it, you know, for maybe 15, 20 minutes. Just, yeah, but I don't do that any longer. But now, and I don't do trout anymore, but I do steelhead, salmon, and basically I like to grill it, and I don't try to kill the taste of it.
Mm-hmm.
So do lemon, maybe a tiny bit of shoyu, but not really change the taste, mm-hmm. the natural taste too much. But I smoke a good portion of what I catch also, mm-hmm. and basically it's brown sugar. I brine it in brown sugar and salt and mm-hmm. add a tiny bit of pepper, and that's about it,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, trout has always been one. I love fish. I love trout. I remember specific trout I have eaten as a little kid.
Yeah.
But trout with just salt, pepper. I like a little butter and a little lemon. But I like Petrolli sole that way. I like sand dabs that way. Mm. I like really good, really fresh fish.
Yeah.
So that's why I wanted to have you all back. Now, can just somebody who's interested in fishing, is it worth it? Is there a benefit to them to go to the Trout Unlimited website and, you know, get information and get involved in some way? Is there an avenue for that?
Yeah. I mean, that's... Kent is the Redwood Empire chapter. That's actually, I have to fess up, I don't fish. I just do this because I like the work. And people, I get phone calls routinely from folks who are coming to California want to know where to fish, so I'll send them to Kent, or I will send them to some of our folks in Southern California, depending upon where they want to go.
And the website is really easy to remember. It's tu.org. Trout Unlimited, tu.org. And your MacIntoshFishingGuide.com?
Matt, you could probably reach me that way, but it's Macintosh Guide Service.
Macintosh Guide Service.
Right, .com. The other thing is you can go to the Redwood Empire TU.org.
Okay.
And it's you don't have to go to Virginia.
Okay.
You go locally. Right.
And on that note, we are out of time, but I will tell you 1-888-4-CATCH-1 will also get you to Kent McIntosh. Rob Dickerson, both of you, thanks so much. You have a great time, Rob, in Hawaii, and meet me back here next week for another yummy episode of Mouthful, the one country's most delicious hour.
Brothers, sisters, help me, please. I said when I give you a signal, I said when I raise up my hands, won't you please join with me together? And praise the Lord, I have a plan. And the preacher, he kept preaching. Long is the struggle hard to fight. And I prayed, Father, please forgive me. And then I stood up, and with all my might, I sang to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner, now let's go.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Every woman, a child, and man, a sang to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner, now let's go eat.